Some of the most rich conversations that we can get into is when we talk about surplus lands. The federal government in their fall budget really identified that there is an inventory of public lands, surplus lands, that should be considered in leveraging for affordable housing development. And when you look at the vast amount of land that's available, it really begs the question, what's the best way to deliver affordable housing at a greater scale to leverage that much land?
Welcome to Building Connections, presented by IPEX. In each episode, we delve into the world of construction, exploring how key leaders in the space shape the infrastructures of tomorrow. Discover the stories behind the solutions that impact municipal, commercial, and residential projects across North America.
Welcome back to Building Connections. Today, we're joined by Nick Gafuscia, Senior Vice President, Ellis Don Community Builders. Ellis Don has had a long history of building communities across North America, and through community builders, they're tackling one of the toughest challenges in the industry, and that's making housing more affordable while ensuring projects actually get built. Nick brings firsthand experience in navigating the barriers that slow down housing development, from financing to approvals to construction execution. Today, we're going to talk about what's working, what's not, what needs to change to build more housing and faster. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Greg. Nice to be here.
It's good to see you. And just for our listeners, maybe just tell us a little bit more about yourself and what brought you to Ellis Don.
Sure thing. I've been with Ellis Don twice. I'm a lawyer by trade. So I started my practice in Toronto, really focusing on social infrastructure from the banking and finance side. Actually, I worked a lot on projects where I was lender's counsel for hospital projects and other social infrastructure projects done into the civil space. And in 2015, I came to Ellis Don as legal counsel, worked in that department for quite a bit. But I really got interested in the Capital Group. And the Capital Group is really the development and equity investment arm of Ellis Don. And for two decades, since the early 2000s, we focused on social infrastructure, hospitals and correctional facilities. And we got into the LRTs. And that really required a construction company to develop a robust team of development professionals from different backgrounds. And in 2019, when the housing crisis was really starting to become a political issue and be really well known, not just in people directly in the sector, but for Canadians in general, and the federal government came with the National Housing Strategy Act, we actually restructured the Capital Group and formed Ellis Don Community Builders. And we were a general infrastructure development team, we took a good group of professionals focused on that and really focused on exclusively on affordable housing development. And that's Ellis Don Community Builders. We operate all across Canada and we're busy. And as you said, there's lots of good things going on, also lots of stuff that's not working. And we really like to be a private sector leader to figure out what works and what doesn't and work hard at what does work.
Okay, that's great intro. And you talked about affordable housing as maybe the prime mission there. So let's talk about that. Everyone's talking about the housing crisis and specifically around how to build more homes and affordable homes. So from your perspective, maybe just walk us through what you think the biggest roadblocks are to actually getting more houses built today.
That's right. Coming from a construction company, we really focus on supply. And there are a lot of levers on the demand side, but that's not really what we do. So we focus exclusively on supply. And to put that into context, Canada's housing crisis, to restore affordability the way that the federal government CMHC would define it by 2030, we need to build between 3.5 and 5.5 million homes. That means per year until 2030, 600,000 to 1 million homes to achieve that goal. Now, the issue is that over the past 10 years, we've only been able at best to build 200,000 units per year, and which means that to close this gap, we need to at minimum triple the capacity of what Canada can build in terms of residential development. And so, you know, if you look at it from that perspective, we have a systemic issue. And part of the problem is that even in the best economic conditions, which we're certainly not in today, we're in a trade war, you're going to see your private developers deliver about 200 to 250,000 units. We focus on those issues that are preventing us to get to that level, but we're also forgetting that, generally speaking, the governments need to account for that other gap, which is the 750,000 units that we need to deliver. And I think that the biggest gap that we have right now is delivery models, looking at alternative delivery models that we can actually reach scale, leverage the capacity of the largest companies in Canada that can build at that scale, and start thinking of models that allow us to move in that direction. We come from a very different perspective as Ellis Don. We're social infrastructure developers. People don't know us as a real estate developer. So we come from that social infrastructure space in the way that we've developed hospitals, for instance, under the public-private partnership model, and take some principles of infrastructure delivery and start applying those to affordable housing development. And I think that really creates a unique offering. And I think it's a good key to the solution to address the affordable housing crisis. Certainly, it's not going to be comprehensive in the answer to all, but that's our kick at the can at the moment to really put a dent in that housing supply gap.
Okay. And so let's jump in and talk more about that. So the gap that you mentioned, I think 750,000, that's a significant gap. What is the role that the government is trying to play in closing that gap? And how do you see that role embracing or leveraging companies like Ellis Don Community Builders and the other private sector participants?
Yeah, so it really starts in 2019, the federal government passed the National Housing Strategy Act, the most comprehensive act that has addressed housing in the history of Canada. And the large part of that strategy is to create financing programs to incentivize both private sector and nonprofits in developing affordable housing. And they've done that through a couple of different financing programs. They're now called the Affordable Housing Fund or the Apartment Construction Loan Program, really directed at projects that are creating at least 30% affordable housing in each of those projects. Affordable housing, generally speaking, is 80% of average market rent. The issue here is primarily, and the reason for why we created our group, is that they put a lot of burden, a lot of pressure on the nonprofit sector to become developers of their own stock. And traditionally, nonprofit organizations were excellent at operating and maintaining their programs and serving their mission or executing on their mission and serving their community from the operating perspective. But the strategy of the federal government has been to push the nonprofit organization specifically into the development world. And I think it's a great strategy to the extent that there's scale and capacity to be leveraged from that strategy. But what we quickly realized is we had a lot of value to add to the nonprofit market to ensure that they, if they didn't have the capacity to fundraise, to do design development, to run through entitlements and approvals at the municipal level, we would provide services to them. And again, using principles from infrastructure, it does make a lot of sense from the perspective that we always built and designed and developed hospitals for the ultimate operator of that hospital. We're doing the same thing for nonprofit organizations because ultimately we're handing this off in perpetuity so the affordable housing organization can take it from there. So it's been a very interesting experience for us because shortly after 2019, COVID started and some of the most challenging circumstances to move our projects through. And we just put shovel in the ground a couple of weeks ago, but it's been an incredible learning experience. And I think there's a lot of new concepts and new strategies that we have to adopt while maintaining the status quo with our clients that day or at present.
Okay, there's a couple of topics I wanted to cover with you around maybe policy, regulations. You hear a lot about some of the challenges on building infrastructure and housing is around regulation, permitting, just getting a project off the ground seems like a challenge. Maybe can you comment on that? How real is that? And is that a big part of the reason why it's a challenge to build in Canada?
Yeah, I think that we can start with one of three things. We can have vision, land, or cash. Essentially, we usually start with one of those. Quite frankly, it's a lot easier to start with cash and we can look at target sites and all those different types of things. But in any affordable housing project, it doesn't look good from the start. You have a nonprofit organization, which it doesn't have the equity to put into a project that a private developer typically would. They don't land bank. Cash is something that's a little bit scarce to run through that process. And then the way that Canada is working at the moment is that to be eligible for the financing programs, you really have to move your project quite along in concept into design development and get it to CMHC requires a Schedule B estimate, which is quite a detailed estimate in terms of what the cost would be. And it does take a lot of money to get there. And it's not very well funded. There are some seed programs from CMHC, and typically you can put together a little bit of cash here and there to get there. So our first order of business has been to provide efficiencies to nonprofits to get to that point where they can actually apply for financing and get to a feasibility analysis so they know they're not taking on too much risk to develop. And I think we've done well with that. We've invested in a base design, which is a template design, gets you to 60%. So that's your starting point for the discussion. The nonprofit operator can start looking at how it can nuance and tailor that design for its purpose. We can look and see how it fits on perhaps a couple different sites they're looking at. And I think perhaps most importantly, it's a good position to start actually raising funds for the project development because you have that good starting point to apply on top of. But that said, we have to think bigger because a lot of these projects are typically 40, 60 units here and there on a bespoke basis. And if you put that all together, that's a lot of project development activity starting from a de novo basis. I think to get to that 750,000 unit mark that we're talking about, we got to start aggregating our project concepts. Perhaps it's multi-sites. Perhaps we're consolidating different nonprofits in the owner group, greater partnerships with the private sector. But thinking bigger, thinking a set of 40 units, can you look at a project that's 150 and start really taking it down into that supply gap?
Building Connections is brought to you by IPEX, leaders in thermoplastic piping systems, where innovation meets reliability. Elevate your infrastructure projects with our comprehensive range of products designed for durability and efficiency. Visit ipexna.com to discover how our solutions can enhance your next project today.
You raise a really good point around scale, right? And how do you scale this to meet some of the targets that are really high? And without that scale, it's going to be hard to see how. So what does the government say? Are you involved in the with the government and housing department to influence some of these policies and decisions? And what is the role that you guys play alongside them?
Yeah, on a day-to-day basis, we're always talking at municipal, provincial, and federal governments about, even on a project-by-project basis, we have to engage through the financing activities of our clients, through design development and the municipal level to get through entitlements and approvals and SPA and all that kind of stuff that you would expect in normal real estate development. And then a little bit of analysis of that, those processes altogether. And that's our day to day. But we also do talk to government, all levels, about different delivery models. And where I'm heartened by this is that I think the governments are starting to really acknowledge that they've put a lot of money, a lot of effort into private real estate development that incorporates affordable housing as an integrated component of it. And I think that's a great strategy. But we also have to consider non-market housing, which could mean that there's going to be the retention of ownership by the government or of the government of those lands, looking at leasehold arrangements, different sorts of public-private partnerships. And that can really unlock a lot of different alternative delivery models to deliver affordable housing at scale.
Okay. And maybe let's touch upon technology or innovation for a minute, because it's been policy. We're talking about streamlining construction financing. Has there been any technology, like innovations in the space, whether it's modularity or something that you see coming that you think is part of the equation as well?
Yeah, I think that I'll get to modular. I think that the one thing that we can really leverage in Canada is that the core housing strategy comes from a federal level. CMHC has really taken on that front and center approach to providing financing into the affordable housing developments across Canada, which means that technological solutions from a jurisdictional geographical can share notes they can figure out from this general program that is funding all of Canada. And then that said, technological solutions and construction solutions are only so good as what they could be applied in the project. We were very successful in delivering three projects in London, Ontario under the Rapid Housing Initiative. It was mandated that it was built with a modular construction solution. We did so successfully. We did it in 12 months. And it's almost like if you create those parameters, the private sector will live up to those. And I think as long as you're clear as to what you need in terms of performance and the construction solution itself, we will respond to it. The alternatives to committing to a modular solution is ensuring that the procurement process finds the best construction solution per site across the country. And I'll go back to the base design. That's not actually a complete spec sourced solution. What it is performance based. So we look at what is required under CMHC financing, whether it's accessibility or sustainability parameters. And what we'll do with the base design, ensure that we actually procure the right construction solution to meet those metrics. That could be a modular solution. It could be prefab. It could be traditional construction. It could be a different phasing of the projects and things like that. And in that procuring and making sure that all of our subs are competitive and everything like that, it's a very granular way to ensure competition within the sector. And I think that if we were to take inventory right now, the Canadian building sector has achieved a lot of innovations at a micro level, and it's building up now into an aggregate level. I think modular is a great example, but it's not the only one. It's a matter of just being competitive, making sure that our client doesn't pay too much for a construction solution, but innovating along the way.
Okay. And so the base design is basically flexible enough to incorporate whatever is the needs of the site, and it gives you the flexibility, or whoever the flexibility, to do that. Now, what about energy costs and some of the fundamental building materials that have increased in costs over the last little while? Do you see costs coming down on the building material side to help as part of this, or do you think that costs are going to be high and that's just like a reality we're going to have to deal with?
It's one of the hardest questions to answer at the moment, because we had COVID and we had immense inflationary pressures on construction costs, and that kind of stabilized into the new normal. And now you're asking me in the midst of a trade war. I can't even quantify what those impacts are, because they really haven't hit directly into the projects yet. We're really running assessments on what that could be. That said, because of the way that we engage with our clients, we run a day-to-day pro forma with them. And the one thing that we do is, because we have experience in the hospital building space, where we're always working with our operators, that life cycle, that energy modeling, we really work that into we just don't look at the hard and soft costs of getting it to shovel in the ground and having our clients figure it out from there. We look at that 40 to 50 year period and make sure that if we need to have a premium design or a construction material, but it is going to be the consequences having a more efficient energy modeling impact, we put that in all into there. But it's a very robust project or process. And with the environment that we're in right now, it is just, it's a very rigorous process. So we're doing our best.
Yeah, it's anyone's guess. And obviously the tariffs are making things very difficult for the markets. The one area that I found interesting this week is the EPA made some very extensive changes on the regulations, and those changes, it's particularly in the US, but those changes were there to basically reduce the cost of energy significantly. And that's a base input to a lot of material costs, right? If your energy costs, your oil costs are much lower, then that should deliver a foundation of lower costs across the board. And that's, I think, one of the things that they're trying to do. So for Canada, I think we have to, if we continue down a regulatory path where we tighten controls around environment, then I would see material costs with the tariffs increasing in Canada, making things more of a challenge for us. So it's just a dynamic that I think we need to take a look at if we're trying to target lowering costs for certain building materials. On the projects you mentioned, maybe just highlight, you mentioned London. Is there any other projects that you guys are working on that you'd like to talk about or highlight?
Yeah, sure thing. I think the project that we just closed on a couple of weeks ago was the 60 Caledon project, our client's Victoria Park Community Homes. I believe it's the biggest private nonprofit in Ontario. I think that project is probably a year older than the group itself. And I think before we even put our brand to that project, that we started working on that, and that was back in 2019. We're very proud of that one. It's 300 units situated right in Hamilton. And it's a huge amount of affordable housing within that project, very welcomed by the community and by the leaders that have really supported the project along the way. I think we probably experienced everything you could in terms of challenges on that project. And we made it through an entire pandemic and we were able to deliver that. Another project that we're proud of right now is actually right behind me, and that's the 140 Merton Street project. And that was procured by CreateTO. I think it's the first Indigenous-led project that CreateTO has procured, and our client is Mississaugi Cree First Nation. A big community in Toronto. Also, they were a displaced nation, ended up in Sault Ste. Marie, and it's a great way for them to have a great flagship project right in a great part of Toronto for their community. We do work as far as up in Cambridge Bay, Nunavut. We're looking at some projects there, working with Kitikmeot Friendship Society. We have another project working with Veterans House Canada in Edmonton. And we do a lot of advisory work. We do a lot of work where those were all development projects that I was referencing. But a lot of the work that we do is nonprofits reach out to us. They might have an idea And they don't want to go too far with that idea because they want to kind of sense check it. So what we'll do, we do this all the time, is run a feasibility analysis to say, hey, this looks good, or this, these are the challenges, or this doesn't look good. And you take a snapshot as a go, no go. If they want to go forward with it, we'll help them build it. Sometimes they might say, that's not something we're willing to take on right now. So lots of those happening right now. And we expect a lot more of those types of analyses to come out in the next few months.
And what's the best way for people to reach you? So you mentioned nonprofits. If they're interested or listening right now, what's the best way that they can contact you?
If you want to see what we're up to, or if you want to reach out, communitybuilders.ellisdon.com is our website. It's a microsite. It's quite interactive. You'll see our initiatives, our tools. We just released an online tool, actually, where a nonprofit could go in and plug in some numbers, see what financing is available, what kind of equity they would have to raise. It's like a mortgage calculator, to be honest. It's if you were to go in a bank and see what your project looks like, they can enter that. But please, communitybuilders.elliston.com, and we'll see you there.
That's great, Nick. That sounds like a great resource. Again, like, congratulations to you and Elliston Community Builders for getting involved in helping shape the affordable housing challenge and being part of the solution. Is there anything else that you want to maybe discuss or leave before we sign off?
Yeah, I'd just like to say we're in the midst of, we just completed a provincial election. It looks like a federal one's imminent. And I've been in this business for a while and working with a lot of nonprofit partners, government partners. And I think that there's a lot of uncertainty, but I think that people should really rest assured that there's a lot of great people that have been working through lots of political cycles, working on innovative solutions. And I'm becoming more and more hopeful, even despite the uncertainty that we're having right now politically, that these, that there's great solutions out there. So stick with us, and please do visit our website to see what that's all about.
Fantastic. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Building Connections. You can find links to all of the resources mentioned in today's episode in the show notes. If you're finding value in our podcast, please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It really helps us connect with more listeners like you. Don't miss out on future episodes. Keep listening and building connections with us.